Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
You are joining We the People Radio for the next 2 hours. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And the sun's just a little brighter today.
It is. It is. Yeah. I feel like I've lost 100 pounds.
That's why I could hardly see you over there.
Off my shoulders.
Yeah, you know, the pressure was building. What an election, I tell you what. Even people who thought it was going to go well were surprised, and the people who...
I was shocked, I'll admit.
It was awesome. It was an awesome sight to behold. I learned a new term. Bill and I were sick last week, and so we were still sick Tuesday, but we clawed our way to the election night event. And about 9:30 or 10, after they still hadn't called it, it's like, oh, man. Bill's out in the truck sleeping. He had a fever. And I looked at this lady next to me, and I'm like, why are you still here? She goes, I know, I really need to go. I haven't been feeling good. I'm like, us either. I said, why are you still here? She goes, I have FOMO.
I'm like, FOMO.
I'm like, you have what? She goes, I have FOMO. Fear of missing out. I was like, oh, my gosh, I have FOMO. We were both sure that we were going to walk out the door and get just, like, you know, far enough away from the building. And then here, nobody goes crazy. So, anyway.
Yeah, we didn't miss it.
We learned that we had FOMO. Probably a lot of you did, too. That's why you're still up at midnight. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. And
are you enjoying the protesting? I mean, the whining and the crying
ridiculous.
And the sobbing?
Yeah, let's burn the city down. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. You can find us online. We have a lot of archives. We have archives way back into 2010. A lot of good shows, and they are all there commercial free for you. It is at wethepeopleradio.us. We have bios on all of our guests and any stuff we talk about. We list all the links and stuff. So it isn't just listening. Some of it can be reading if you'd like to go do some homework. We've done lots of shows on, political Islam and national security stuff and immigration. That's our second hour today. We'll be talking with the Remembrance Project.
First hour, we're going to talk about...
are we
about,
doing that?
Donald. About Donald's best
Ronald
friend. Ronald McDonald.
All right, you're fired. Phil's fired. Do we have Evan with us?
We did. I convinced him that he...
that he should stay.
Was, in fact, scheduled that he...
that he should stay.
Was, in fact, scheduled with us for this hour.
I know it's confusing. He's a different time. Everybody's a different time zone. But we were psyched about this one. This is our friend Stephen Manfredi who shot me a message like last week and said, "Hey, this will be really good. You want to have this book featured? It is called Putin's Master Plan."
Very timely.
I was going to say, what great timing! And so I have a little info here on Mr. Smith. Evan Roth Smith is a political strategist and communications consultant based in New York City. He's worked for political and private sector clients in all 50 states and more than a dozen countries, including the United Kingdom, South Africa, Israel, Turkey, and Japan. He's advised Democrats, Republicans, and independent campaigns, as well as mayoral, presidential, and prime ministerial candidates around the world. He's been doing all sorts of stuff. And there's more. But I will stop at that point, and he can fill in the blanks. But he has co-authored a book called Putin's Master Plan. And I won't go any farther because it cuts into his time. Evan.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, thanks for hanging out with us since it's like late afternoon for you and you probably have better things to do. But
hardly. This is where I want to be.
But yeah.
Oh, right answer.
I planned for it all week. All week. I've just been sitting here waiting. but no, books like this oftentimes don't get the coverage that they should because, you know, well, we don't know a lot about him. It's probably not something we need to know. Give people the pitch. Why do they need to know about this?
Well, you know, it's important, and you're right. The timing couldn't be better. It's so important for people to realize that Putin does have this master plan to break up NATO and other American alliances and roll back American power and global influence and replace it with Russian power and global influence so that he can go about rebuilding his vision of a new Soviet Union or Russian Empire or whatever you want to call it. And connecting the dots on what we see in the headlines from Syria to Ukraine to hacking to Iran to North Korea and even beyond to places like Latin America and Africa, is so important because it's so easy to be overwhelmed by this. But from Putin's perspective, there is an end goal. There is a mission. There is a master plan. And so far, America has been at the mercy of Putin in this regard. And we need to change that, which is why we wrote this book.
Yeah, and it's step by step, and he's moving right down the path, isn't he?
Well, even with just a cursory look, you can see that he's got kind of a gleam in his eye, and he's been on the march while we've been running around like chickens with our heads cut off.
Yes, exactly.
You know, he's been making plans. So let's see, where should we go from here? What things would you like folks to know about the book?
Well, might as well start with Ukraine because that's where Putin started. Although he started, you know, quite a bit before then. But what we've seen in Ukraine is sort of very scary. It's really the first of many in Putin's mind because he does have these real territorial ambitions in Europe. And you know, we saw that when he first invaded Ukraine and when this military intervention in Ukraine started. You know, people said, "Oh, it's." You know, just the Russian community, and it's about the change of government, and it's about the electoral outcome. And next thing we know, Putin's annexing territory and achieving, you know, decades-old goals of Russian nationalists and revanchists. And, you know, it really does signal that he has goals like this all over Europe, in countries like, you know, Estonia and Lithuania, Latvia, potentially even Belarus, Poland. I mean,
He's done a good job in Georgia as well.
Yeah, Georgia was sort of the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, when he sort of poked his nose into their country and saw what he could get away with, and we really did next to nothing about it, and neither did our allies in any meaningful way. And Putin said, "Wow, I really can get away with this stuff." And then Ukraine was next on the list.
Yeah, that's the scary part, is we've kind of taken this weird hands-off, you know, we're spectators on the world
stage.
We're
taking the James Taylor approach.
Yeah, which is a fantastic foreign policy plan. But, okay, so basically at this point he's winning. I mean, his plan is a winning strategy.
It is, and in part that's because of exactly... You know what you're talking about with this hands-off approach of and when you know Obama came into office about 5 months after Putin invaded Georgia, and his first move was to say, well, you know, maybe if I try and make things right, maybe if I show a little friendship towards Putin, if I extend an olive branch, he'll be better behaved. And that was the Russian reset with Hillary Clinton infamously going to Moscow with the button and then the New START treaty, which was this really bad nuclear treaty, frankly, for the United States, and sort of a gift, a sweetheart nuclear deal for Putin. And what Obama thought was, you know, if I give him these concessions and if I treat him, you know, like I respect him and like we can be friendly, maybe he'll be better behaved. And of course, the truth is that he wasn't, and we're seeing the consequences of that.
Yeah,
today.
And Putin plays for keeps, and he looked at that and thought, I'll take this guy
and up the ante.
Yeah, exactly. And he's kept doing it, too. In fact, I was told, as part of writing this book, I traveled all over Europe talking to, you know, these diplomats and these politicians and these people who saw exactly how the war in Ukraine started and how the war in Syria started, people of contacts in Russia, et cetera. And one of the things I was told was that when we backed away from the red line in Syria, and, you know, this famous red line that Obama drew that, you know, if Assad uses chemical weapons in Syria, America will intervene. And when we backed away from that, Putin said, wow, what will they stand up for? And that's was a major part of their decision to go and use force in Ukraine. So they figured if we weren't going to live up to the red line in Syria, we probably wouldn't live up to the Budapest Memorandum to defend Ukrainian territorial integrity. And so they kept rolling.
So what about the idea that it's none of our beeswax and they can do whatever, you know? I mean, it has nothing to do with us and we should butt out. What about that idea?
Right. Well, you know,
it's not really my idea. But
it's fair, of course. You know, it's not like America has any business fighting a war with Russia right now. There's no reason for us to. But what is true is that, you know, there's so much we can do to help these countries just sort of defend themselves. I mean, you know, Ukraine is one of the poorest countries in Europe. And they don't have a modern military, but they've been working tirelessly since the end of the Cold War to dig out from the legacy of Soviet totalitarianism and from, you know, communist economic mismanagement that destroyed their country's economy, killed millions and millions of people through manufactured famines. And they're trying to dig out from that, and they've worked very hard. We made promises to all these freed peoples. We said it's a brave new world at the end of the Cold War. People are going to be democratic. They're going to be prosperous, free markets, trade. Everything's going to work out. And then Putin showed up, invaded their country, and now we won't even, you know, sell them the weapons they're asking for to protect themselves being invaded by a military superpower. So it's sort of, you know, pathetic. We're backing away from the promise of the American vision for the world, that if other countries just behave like us, and that if other countries embrace democracy and free markets and human rights the way we have, then things work out. And if we're not willing to advocate for those values, people like Putin will keep trampling them.
Do you think we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I need to know, do you think NATO has really done its part to you know, help stem this Russian aggression?
Yeah, there are a lot
aggression.
Of people who don't like NATO.
Let's talk a little bit about that when we come
back. Let's hit a little NATO when we come back. Because there are, you know, people who don't deal with it all the time are like, you know, those guys, I don't know if that's a good deal or not. So let's shine a little light on that for us when we come back. We're chatting with Evan Roth-Smith, author of Putin's Master Plan. And you can find all that great information at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a link to his book and all the rest of it. Be right back.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
That's a night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's a night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul and old backwoods southern lawyer.
The other Georgia. Oh. But they did say Georgia. Good one.
Yeah, we got a song with Georgia in it.
Oh, my gosh. You are listening to We the People. We're here with Evan Roth-Smith, author of Putin's Master Plan. And the master plan is to destroy Europe, divide NATO, and restore Russian power and global influence. Oops.
Yeah.
So, okay, destroying NATO. There'd be a handful of folks that would say, like, ah, good. You know, we think NATO schmato. Why do we need them?
Well, you know, it's true, and it's come up this campaign. You know, Donald Trump talked a lot about, you know, NATO's broken, and the European partners in NATO aren't paying their fair share. And there is, of course, a treaty obligation. You're supposed to pay more than 2% of your GDP, or rather, of your government spending towards defense. And most NATO countries aren't meeting it. And I actually agree with that. You know, a lot of this book is about how NATO is broken and how NATO hasn't done its job in Europe. But where I differ, and my co-author differs with Trump on this, is that the solution isn't to walk away and say, well, this thing isn't working, so let's throw it out. The solution is to recommit and say, well, this thing worked pretty darn well for about 60 years, unprecedented peace and prosperity in Europe and in the United States, by the way. And, you know, it's we think now with Russia about NATO solely as a organization to protect Europe. But the only people who have ever needed NATO, who ever called on NATO to defend us, was the United States after 9/11. You know, we called on our NATO partners to go into Afghanistan with us and track down the Taliban and defeat al-Qaeda. And they showed up. They showed up. And now when they need us, we're saying, yeah, maybe we won't show up. And that's not really a great look. That doesn't inspire confidence. It's also not quite right. And so what we need to do, and what I believe we need to do, is come to the table with some real solutions for improving European security. Things like finishing the NATO missile shield that protects Europe from and America from Iranian and Russian nuclear attack.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because we gave up on that, didn't we? I mean, didn't we walk away from that?
We did. Obama walked away from it shortly after the 2012 election, and it was another one of these giveaways to Putin that was designed to maybe improve relations, because Putin, of course, fought tooth and nail against the missile shield, and Obama said, well, maybe if I give it to him, he won't go around invading countries like he did in Georgia. So he gave it to him, and, you know, what do you know? Putin still went around invading countries. So that's unfinished business that we can finish. And we can tell the Europeans, hey, listen, we'll do things like the missile shield. We'll do things like permanent bases. You just got to pay your fair share and be as committed to this project as we are.
Well, none of these really heavy-handed leaders respect weakness. I mean, that's something we all learned at elementary school. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, weakness is, gee, I'm the oldest of five kids. We learned that at our house. Never show, no, you know, I hear people say, oh, I'm afraid of, actually, I worked with a lady, I'm afraid of bugs. I was like, oh. Getting rid of you is going to be easy.
Bugs in your office.
She had a pest infestation. It was unbelievable. But I mean, that's just—I don't know. Maybe.
Well, it's common sense. With, you know, in our foreign policy, like you stated in your book, with Clinton and Kerry, we have just given away the house, trying to make people happy and
here,
taking this.
If
stance.
You have this, will you like us? Here, if I give you this, will you like us?
Take this, and now we can all be friends. Well, that's not what they respect, and that hasn't worked.
So we've been super. Have we been super naive, or is there some reason we've been doing this, just looking like idiots?
Well, I mean, I think it's what I alluded to is that. I mean, as you said, it's sort of common sense that it wouldn't work, but the people in Washington thought that it would.
Do you think they really did, though? Or was it like they had something else going on and they just made it look like they were kind of being dopes?
I think they were just misguided in that, you know, even though you had people on both sides of the aisle, you know, and remember, we had people, Democrats and Republicans in the 1990s, who were part of winning the Cold War and beating the Soviet Union, who know how to get tough with Russia, who know how to get tough with foreign leaders, begging for stronger foreign policy from Washington.
Right.
This was a bipartisan effort to try and get America to be stronger. And so, you know, the fact that Washington failed to get the message shouldn't really surprise us, since they don't really seem to get the message on just about anything these days.
Yeah, not a lot of message getting going on.
No.
But, okay, so the peace through strength thing seemed to be a great deal, and it was working really well. Did they ever advance? I guess I didn't follow some of that as closely as I know you have. Did they ever advance a reason why that was a bad strategy? You know, I mean, not, you know, by those words, but they just had
the
hopes.
The truth is no. I mean, we heard lead from behind.
Right.
You know, we heard, or however they put it, you know, leading cooperatively, deferring to our partners, all these sort of excuses to abandon American leadership in the world. And that's really what it was. And of course, you know, as you said, Putin is, and all these people like him that we, you know, tend to face down around the world, really do only appreciate strength. And Putin, of course, is a former KGB officer. He was a loyal foot soldier in the Cold War on the Soviet side, but he wasn't, you know, a bureaucrat in the communist government. He wasn't some ideologue in a Russian university, you know, expounding the benefits of communism. He was a field officer in the KGB, going out and getting results and punishing dissidents and tracking down spies. This is a guy who likes power and who likes achieving goals and who knows how to do it. So when we are bad at it, he's going to not take us seriously.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of Americans don't understand about Putin, is he came from a background of power, strength, results, and he liked it. And he wants to go back to that, and he wants results. And like you say, his master plan is we're going to get results.
Well, the other countries, it doesn't really allow them, you know, much option other than to join him. If we're going to, you know, we have a president running around in mom jeans and Kerry's riding a girl's bike, you know, we have just these pictures, you know, because here's Putin, you know, no shirt on a horse, you know, and here we got John Kerry on the girl's bike with the, you know, with the little tassels. And it makes us look like somebody that they shouldn't depend on. I'm guessing. I mean, when you go around Europe, what do they say? It's like, well, you know, we'd like to go with you guys. But...
Well, one of the most fascinating things, and this was, you know, that I heard while I was in Europe, and this was well before, you know, the presidential contest really started, well before Trump came out, well before, you know, even Bernie Sanders, anything like this. And I was in Europe in a non-NATO country, that is, you know, even more worried about security than the European, than the NATO countries, because they have no fallback.
Yeah, they're nowhere.
I was talking to a politician who was a socialist, member of a European soft socialist democratic party, who loved American Democrats, loved Barack Obama, you know, supported them. And he was saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I just hope Republicans win the next presidential election.
because
otherwise we're doomed in Europe.
Yeah.
So
what is your take on I know you don't have a crystal ball and
what?
But you've got
That's not what I was told.
What's your prediction? I mean, Trump talked a pretty tough game on NATO. You know, they jumped all over him for having a relationship with Putin, which I'd like to hear your take on that. But what do you think is going to happen with Trump? I mean, do you think he's going to take a stand against Putin?
I sure hope so. I mean, I think anyone who tells you they know what's going to happen with Trump is either lying or Donald Trump.
Yeah, those are the two choices. Well, okay. How about this? Let's make it easier. If Hillary would have been elected, where do you think we would have headed?
I think it would have been a play at a second chance. You know, we always heard that Hillary was the hawk in the Obama White House, right? That she always wanted a little more strength, a little more intervention, a little more America going out and doing stuff. The problem is, when she was tasked with going out and doing stuff like the Russian reset, Putin generally got the better of her. And I really do believe that it would have been an attempt at a second chance, an attempt at redemption for her, as far as Russia was concerned. Maybe a point of personal pride, but again, you know, Putin did not respect Hillary Clinton even a lick. He still thought of her as Bill Clinton's wife, not as a real Secretary of State or anything like that, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think he has a much different opinion of Kerry either, does he?
No.
He's Bill Clinton's
wife? Kerry is a punchline to the Russians.
when your
punishment for them bombing civilians is saying we're no longer going to negotiate for peace, the Russians will go, well, terrific. We didn't want peace in the
first place. Yeah, we weren't really down for that in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, he really is a punchline to them.
Interesting. So do you think we're going to the Cold War again? Do we return there?
It's the best words we have for it, right? I mean, listen, you know, Donald Trump has said he wants things to get better with Russia. Putin said he's open to things getting better. And sort of counterintuitively, the best way that Trump could go about improving the situation with Russia is to be a strong leader who promotes American interests abroad, because that's the only thing that Putin respects, and that's the only thing that'll get Putin to stop, is if he thinks, wow, if I really upset the United States of America, they might do something about it.
Well,
and then they'll be willing to cooperate and play ball.
Well, the countries outside of Russia, the guys that can pick an ally, let's face it, geographically, they're basically tied to Russia. They're right next door.
Mm-hmm.
And if siding with us looks like they're going to, you know, get their head chopped off, it's like, well, that's an easy choice.
It really is. And, you know, that's why it's so damaging when America talks about backing away from NATO, because these little countries that are surrounding Russia are saying, well, if America is talking about abandoning France, which was our ally in the Revolutionary War, of course they don't care about us, you know? Of course they're not going to stick with us if they're talking about walking away from, you know, the United Kingdom or Germany. So it really has a ripple effect when we talk about ending these alliances or not living up to, you know, things like NATO.
Yeah, and in past history, I mean, let's face it, America has always been the go-to country when things really got bad. You know, America did step up and kind of clean things up for them. We've not done that for a long time. And I don't feel there's any respect for our country over there. And I think that's what we need to reinstill in these European nations, is that America is strong, is willing.
That we have the capacity to.
Exactly.
You know, all of our rules have been, now, you know, everybody's got to play nice, and, you know, we've got to have rubber bullets, and I don't know, whatever we're doing. It's just silly. We've had a lot of silliness. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with our guest, Evan Roth Smith, and his awesome book that we have not had a chance to read yet because we just learned about it 2 days ago. But it is called Putin's Master Plan to Destroy Europe, Divide NATO, and Restore Russian Power and Global Influence. And I think now that we're done fretting about who's going to be the president, we should fret about bigger things. And this would be top on the list. So all the information's on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Give it to them, whatever they want. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Bob, you're killing it on the music. That's making me laugh. We forgot to warn you, Evan. There's a little goofing off that happens.
I hadn't picked up on it.
Most people figure it out pretty quick, but it's like, what the heck is going on with these guys anyway? Well, you know, I don't know. Let's face it. We've had a lot of frustration over the last 8 years. And without a little bit of goofing off, it's a blood pressure issue, honestly. I was reading a little thing about your book here in the during the break after I got done laughing. Putin's Master Plan is the first comprehensive attempt to systematically explain Putin's global strategy, which could inevitably and inexorably lead to the breakup of the NATO alliance and potentially to war with the West. You contend that the West has no strategy, no plan, no tactics to confront Putin's master plan other than imposing limited sanctions, which have done little to deter hostility. Tell us about that, because I kind of think you're right.
Well, you know, I'd like to think I'm right, too, in that you know, the facts sort of bear out this narrative of, you know, Putin with this sort of singular vision of pushing back against America wherever he can,
sure,
whether it's in Syria or Ukraine or wherever else. And sort of, you know, getting into this buffer zone of pushing American influence, American values, and not just American, but Western values and Western institutions like democracy, like courts of law, like rule of law, like free markets, and just getting them as far away from him as possible, and then moving in with his vision of this sort of autocratic, you know, elite-controlled economy that he, you know, has deployed into these countries that he takes over. And we're seeing that, you know, in the parts of Ukraine now that he's taken control of. The oligarchs are in control. His party and the parties that he condones are in control. And so long as we don't do anything about it, our vision of, you know, the values that the world should operate on will be in decline. And we will very quickly find ourselves very lonely on this continent of ours, surrounded by a world filled with dictators and oligarchs and all sorts of other undesirable individuals.
Sure. And you figure, well, you look at Iran and, you know, the big giveaway to them. Where does that all come mm-hmm. into play with this?
Well, Iran is sort of this masterstroke by Putin, because one of the reasons that Obama struck the New START deal, which was this, you know, sweetheart nuclear deal with Putin, was that Putin got on board in return for the New START deal with the sanctions on Iran. And Obama had paid for it, essentially, by letting the Russians build out their nuclear arsenal, which is exactly what they did. And now here we are, a couple years later, and we've dropped the sanctions on Iran and given Iran a nuclear deal. So what does Putin walk away with? He walks away with a great nuclear deal for his country, Russia. He walks away with a pretty darn good nuclear deal for his ally, Iran. And we walk away with diddly, right? These sanctions that lasted for a couple of years and didn't do all that much. So it's just, you know, it's so frustrating to watch this and watch him get what he wants and just play American diplomats and Western leaders.
One of the things that I think a lot of folks talk about are the sanctions we put against Russia early on with the Ukraine deal and Georgia and all that. What effect did those sanctions have, and did Putin really care?
No, it's inconvenient, but that's it. America doesn't do enough business with Russia to really punish them economically. What we've tried to do is, you know, punish some of their leaders, say, oh, this Russian can't, you know, this guy who's a friend of Putin can't get a visa to come to America.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really mind that. If we were serious about that kind of stuff, then we would start turning over evidence of, you know, the financial interests that Vladimir Putin and his inner circle have around the world. Maybe expose them to some legal action in Europe and the Middle East, things that would actually make them feel the pinch. But the only people who can make the Russians sweat economically are the Europeans. But they're so addicted to Russian oil and gas that they've really struggled to toe a hard line against Putin because they're worried he'll shut their heat off.
Yeah, that's
and that's a real concern.
Oh, yeah, they put themselves in a real bad position having that dependence on...
And he's done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
He did it to Ukraine several times in the mid-2000s. He shut the heat off in all of Ukraine in the middle of winter. And Ukrainian winter is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. And people died.
Wow.
Yeah, and Putin kind of, I don't see him being really moved by that.
Yeah, and the...
He strikes me as the kind of guy that goes, I feel kind of bad about that.
Well, when the price of oil started going down, that really hurt Russia on the world market. But did it really affect them, or did it more affect the countries they were supplying the oil to?
Well, you know, Russia and Putin obviously prefers higher oil prices to lower oil prices because it helps him balance his budget and it helps Russia, you know, make a little more money at home. But just like under the Soviet Union, they're going to pay for bullets before they pay for bread. And so the Russian military has never had problems in the last couple of years finding the money it needs to buy new tanks or buy new jets or upgrade its weapons or, you know, buy new nuclear missiles. And Putin's made sure of that. So, you know, as long as Europe keeps buying their oil at whatever price, and their gas, Putin will keep going the way he's going.
What do we know about the Russian military as opposed to the American military?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what do they think about what we've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, have they really built up their military? Because I mean, I read some articles here not too long ago about how their air force basically is really in disrepair. They can't keep planes in the air due to budgetary restraints. But is that true? I mean, are they really on a war footing, or do they have a ways to go before we need to really be concerned?
Well, you know, they've always had some sort of deep-seated structural issues in their military. When the Soviet Union collapsed, you know, all of their veterans were left without pensions and medical care. It's, you know, the military institutions really degraded very rapidly. And they've, you know, sort of struggled to rebuild that. But the last five or so years, Putin has spent so much money. One would say irresponsibly if it were... You know, any American government that spent this amount of money on the military would be, you know, mocked and thrown out of office. But Putin spent so much money on his military building it up that recently the Pentagon actually did a war game earlier this year just to see what would happen. You know, this is, I guess, what we pay them for, to see what would happen if this kind of stuff popped off. They simulated an all-out war between Russia and the United States. And the results of the war game were inconclusive. They basically didn't really know who would win. And that's sort of not very reassuring.
No, that's pretty frightening.
Especially because we know about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the result would have been conclusive and we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot on the horizon. When did you guys start working on this book anyway?
We started working on it, you know, I guess about a year and a half ago. My co-author, Doug Schoen, had written a book prior called The Russia-China Axis, which was about how Russia and China are cooperating to sort of confound American interests and oppose us, defeat us economically as well as militarily. And right after he finished writing that book, Putin invaded Ukraine. And he realized, well, you know, I think there might be another book here just about Russia. And he approached me, and we started writing, and we wanted to get it out before the election, and we just made that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. when did it come out, actually?
It came out late September, last week of September.
Okay.
And wanted it to be out before the election so people could read it and could help inform, you know, some of the challenges that the next president's going to face.
Sure. And now, this is the same Doug Schoen that we see on Fox and whatnot?
It is indeed.
Same guy. Well, I happened to be watching, I don't even remember whose program he was on, but I was watching that interview where they asked him about Hillary, and he was like, yeah, look, I'm not on the team anymore. this could be a constitutional crisis, I believe, were his words. And, I mean, that was one of those where you're like, holy cow. That was the first, that was really the first major, for me, that was the first really bright ray of sun that came through the clouds. I thought, oh my gosh.
Well, I guess, I guess we dodged that bullet in its own way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a brave new world we're living in now.
Fascinating. I mean, it's interesting. I think the one thing that we all are realizing is nobody really spent a huge amount of time thinking about what would happen afterward if he won.
No.
You know what I mean? The people who, you know, planned to vote for him or, you know, whatever the thing was, just not voting for Hillary, so they're voting for him, however they lined up on it, I think nobody looked at what would happen on November 9th. We were also focused on November 8th.
I can tell you one person.
Yeah?
I can tell you one person who definitely thought about what would happen if he won, and that's Vladimir Putin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and what do you think about that?
He's always got a contingency. He's always you know, ready for whatever we might throw at him. And I'm certain I know he planned for Donald Trump's presidency, because otherwise he wouldn't have had a statement ready to go as soon as Trump won. He wouldn't have had materials prepared and a press conference called and all that stuff. Because Putin likes to carefully plan, you know, everything he says, every public statement. And he was ready to go. So we'll see. I mean, the honest truth is that Trump inherits the presidency facing so many issues here at home and abroad with ISIS and China and Iran and everyone, not just Russia.
Right.
That Putin will probably, you know, make whatever move he's going to make next, and Trump will respond.
Wow. Evan, we got to take a real quick break, but when we come back, talk to us about some specific solutions that we can take to kind of counter the Russian aggression that's happening.
Yeah, what should
happening.
We be looking for if they're doing it right? Here. Good idea, Bill.
Yeah, we'll be back.
That Bill, that's why we have him. He's good at this. Be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. My guess is that wasn't the speech that he had prepared. What did he say anyway? I didn't hear it.
He said, actually, it wasn't far off from that. He said, you know, congratulations, Mr. Trump, and we're ready to improve relations if he's serious about it. I hope we have a, you know, bright, friendly future with the United States of America. We'll see how long that lasts.
So there was a little sucking up?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but he had total disdain for Obama. I mean, how many press conferences did we see where he wouldn't even look at him when they were together? I mean, it was comical.
Very interesting. So, what kind of stuff should we watch for if they're going to, you know, if they're actually going to do this correctly in the new administration? What kinds of stuff should they be doing?
Well, I would say number one, far and away, is NATO. And we see what line they take towards NATO. If they moderate, and we kind of saw Trump saying one thing and Pence, his vice president, now our vice president, saying another thing, with Trump saying, we're going to see, maybe we don't need this anymore. The Europeans aren't living up. NATO isn't really useful too much anymore. And then we had Pence saying, we're going to be stronger than ever. We're going to, you know, do what it takes to stop Putin, talking pretty tough. So if this administration winds up pursuing, you know, a strong NATO policy that, as I, you know, talked about earlier, tries to fix things instead of walking away from them, which is what Mike Pence, I believe, would have us do, then we should be in pretty good shape. If we walk away from it and say, you know what, forget this, it's not working, it's broken, goodbye and good luck, then we're in for some trouble.
Who would you like to see as a Secretary of State?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I've seen a whole bunch of names bounced around. I guess if I had to pick one, it would be Richard Haass, who is a former national security official from the first George Bush administration and then briefly in the second George Bush administration, who's the head of the Council on Foreign Relations.
And he knows what he's doing? And
oh, he most certainly does. He's a very bright guy, and I think he'd make a great Secretary of State.
Interesting. Who'd be the runner-up?
You know, I wish Colin Powell would take the job, but I think he's off the market.
Yeah, I think he shot himself in the foot this last round.
I think he might have. But, you know, Trump will pick who he'll pick, and hopefully it's someone with a level head who can go into rooms with foreign leaders and say, we're gonna fix this mess that just about every country in the world is in right now.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of folks don't give Trump much credit is, you know, he's a smart man. He's going to surround himself with folks that know what's going on, that have some experience, because he knows he doesn't have experience in a lot of this stuff, if any of it. But he's got an idea of where we should be going, and I think he'll put people in there that will put
us
forward.
And what do you think about Pence? I mean, I was really excited when he chose Pence as his running mate.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Pence, at least on foreign policy, you know, I'm not from Indiana. I don't know his real track record there too well. But I know in foreign policy, he seems like a reasonable enough guy who cares very deeply about American strengths and American power abroad and making sure that we protect our people and our interests and our national security and live up to our alliances. So it's all for the good.
No mm-hmm. kidding. Well, when you and Doug were working on your book, which way did you guys think it was going to go? Down the Hillary trail.
Oh man, you know, actually, when the book came out in print, one of the first thing I did is I checked the index for Donald Trump because we didn't mention him once in the book. We weren't even thinking about him.
What chapter is Trump in?
Because we were going to ask you that.
He had this great relationship with Putin, but
supposedly
I think we found that really didn't exist.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's we didn't really know. We didn't really know which way it was going to go. We wrote the book sort of for any president. No matter who they were going to be.
Sure. And so while you were doing your research, what did you find from people, the diplomats and things that you were talking to? Do they see the weakness that has just taken over our country? Or are they kind of freaked out about it like
most
Americans are? Oh, do
they see
the
Putin, you know, expansionism? I mean, are they pretty much in agreement that this guy is making a march?
The closer to Russia they live, the more terrified they are.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
When you are on some of these small countries that border Russia, you could feel it. You could feel it in the air, especially these Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. They're NATO members. They're EU members. They have beautiful, prosperous countries, peaceful countries. They threw off communism. They did everything right. They're democratic. They're, you know, free market. Everything is going beautifully, and they could have it all ripped away from them by Putin overnight if he decided to invade, and they are terrified of that prospect because they don't think we'll do anything about it.
Yeah, because they basically are defenseless without NATO, without the United States, aren't they?
true. Although they are armed to the teeth, they know they'd still be steamrolled.
Oh, sure.
Sure, because there's not a... Yeah, I mean... you could have a great army, but if it's tiny...
Ukraine thought that they were going to stand up to Putin, and that was a joke. I mean...
Well, there was a lot of discussion mm-hmm. with Ukraine that the people in Ukraine really wanted to go with Russia. But I think that was propaganda.
It was. And you know, it's mostly propaganda. There's, of course, a small percentage of the Ukrainian population that likes Russia more than it likes its current government. There's probably a small percentage of the American population that likes Russia more than it likes its current government.
There were moments, but, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's any country.
And, yeah, like, why can't we look like we're large and in charge, huh? Why wouldn't that be okay?
For a change.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Evan, we are down to the last 30 seconds, but we really thank you for taking some time out of your afternoon.
Yeah, great interview. That was some great information on Putin, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in January.
When you guys embark on your next adventure, come back on with us, will you?
Always, anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a million. Okay, so we were talking with Evan Roth Smith about Putin's master plan to destroy Europe, divide NATO, and restore Russian power and global influence. And now we're not doing that anymore. Yay! Thanks, Evan. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.